You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this. Hello, friends. In this episode, I'm going to introduce you to Jen Vertanen. We talk and have an honest and, I think, powerful conversation about what it really looks like to call off a divorce at the very last minute and the messy human growth that comes with rebuilding a relationship and an identity from the inside out. If you are a longtime listener, then I love you, and you already know that my conversations aren't always linear. In this one, we also chat about the joys of reading, quote, not very well-written smut, unquote, and what it means to shape the future of your own life the way you really want to and not just how you fell into it. I am pretty sure you're going to love this conversation, and it's time, so let's do it. Jen Vertanen, welcome to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm so happy you're here. Are you ready for a fun chat?
I'm so ready. So ready, Amy. Thanks for having me.
I love it. All right. I start all of my interviews by asking where my guests are. So what part of the world are you in?
I am in the dead center of the U.S., Minneapolis, St. Paul, Twin Cities, Minnesota.
Awesome.
It is dreary here today.
You are on the cusp of summer, where I am in deep summer already.
Okay.
So I'm so far south that I'm like, we're approaching the like unfun season in South Florida, and you guys are rocketing towards beautiful summer in Minnesota.
I had to move my daughter into Eckerd in St. Pete's mid-August.
No, it's an absolutely fair statement. And Eckerd is right on the coast. Like, you have a coastal breeze. The closer you are, the while the wind always blows. But it's always helpful to remember that people did not live full time in South Florida until central air was invented in the 1950s, right?
Oh,
so like, they could make the poster child of this far south in Florida, Joseph Carrier, who invented that. And it would be spot on. Like, it is a reminder of how uninhabitable it is to be outside in that part of the season. So very good. So in a second, we're going to talk about the topic of the day. But before we do that, topic of the day is not actually the oppressive South Florida weather. But I'm going to ask you one more warm-up question, which is, what is something you do to take care of yourself that you or somebody else might consider self-care?
There's a lot I do for self-care, but one of my ones I love the most is I read poorly written smut before I go to bed.
Why do you call it poorly written smut?
The writing's not, it's not like, it's not well written, but the scenes are great.
So, yeah, so just general smut, though, like, not, you're not seeking out poorly written smut.
No.
You're just saying
Kindle
it's
Unlimited.
Not right.
I subscribe to Kindle Unlimited, and those aren't the best.
You're just
quality.
Saying it's not literature. This is not Toni
this
Morrison
is not highbrow.
Or Bronte.
Exactly.
But what a time to be alive, where smut is a category of readability, because I do not remember this from earlier parts of my life. But
we had to sneak it. Like, it was such a shame thing.
And now it's a category. There's like an audio service that you can subscribe
to. There's conferences.
I didn't know about, but what a great time to be alive. I love that answer, Jen. I'm so happy about that. All right. Smut is not the topic of the day.
No.
It could be. But what is the topic of the day? We're going to talk about a time when you called off a divorce. And I, because of the nature of what I do and who I talk to, I have actually heard a lot of relationship stories. And I even know a random data point that of people who get divorced, like, there's this weird statistic that when you get 10% of them will remarry their original partner, which is wild.
Interesting.
Isn't that wild? Like, I think it's of remarriages. So some people never remarry, but there's this little subgroup that does that. Yeah.
That's interesting. And that actually will tie into the story I'm going to tell.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So very good. So this is, though, the first conversation I've had about, like, of this exact thing. So let's start with this to set the time frame. About how long ago was this going on? Were you calling this off?
2015, so 10 years ago.
All right, so 10 years ago. Now let's go back to the beginning. Before all of this, way before, when did you first meet your husband?
Oh, gosh. Well, I dated his brother first for a few months. And
Okay.
when I met my husband, the older brother, I told my friends I wish I'd met the older brother first. Gosh, we've been together probably 25, 26 years now, married 23.
Okay, very good.
Yeah.
That also is not as unusual as people think it
Really?
is. Oh, yeah, no, the number of conversations that I've had with people about, sibling affairs, like not affairs with the siblings, but like
Yeah.
where you it's more that you break up with one part of the family and start dating another part of the family. Yeah, it's not as unusual as people might think it is. Anyway, that is also not the topic of the day, but there you go. Okay, so I know because you told me that you are a parent. So tell me a little bit more about your family because it ties into the story. How many kids do you have? Like that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so I have three adult children. My two oldest are, I had them with my first husband. My first husband, we were married. We got pregnant at 19, got married, and we were together for 8 years before I divorced.
Okay.
About 2 years in, I was like, this is not what I want the
All
rest of
right,
my
starter
life.
marriage.
Yep, starter
Starter
marriage.
marriage.
Yep. And then my daughter, my youngest, turns 21 in July. She is with my, I had her with my now husband.
And so the story we're talking about now is the second husband.
The second husband.
The second
Yes.
husband. All
Yes.
right, very good. So you actually had it. You had a knowledge, you had an experienced knowledge of what this process was. All right, so that's very,
Yes.
I think that's probably an important part.
It is, but it
So
was the knowledge of a 27-year-old versus the knowledge of a 45-year-old.
fair point, very
Yes.
fair point. So I would say that there's not a lot of black and white things in family relationships. Like almost everything is nuanced and complex. But one of the things that is probably true most of the time, generally speaking, people don't go through divorce because everything is wonderful and rosy.
Yeah.
There's a reason, because the process itself is a hassle, right? The process
Yeah.
is a hassle. So share with us, though, some of the things that were going on before 2015. Like, what was the set the scene for what you were feeling that you thought, listen, the solution here is breaking up this marriage.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot there, so I will condense it.
Okay.
But shitty childhood that turned into being a young mom when at that point I never wanted to be a mom, and raising my babies through my 20s and 30s when everyone else was, out at the bars, happy hours, doing all the fun stuff. And I just, carrying the childhood stuff, carrying the young mom and new professional stuff, like all of that, it just led to years and years of just kind of this resentful, resentful. I felt kind of lonely. I had isolated myself, all sorts of different reasons, right? Bored, like this can't be all there ever is. And what happened is it culminated in me kind of making my husband the effigy,
Yeah.
right? Like, because I had tried all sorts of things, healthy and unhealthy, through the years to quote unquote fix myself and my life, right? And nothing had ever worked. It'd be fun in the moment, but it wouldn't stick. And I was just at the point where I'm like, I need to recreate, reinvent who I am, my life, all of that. And like I said, through the years, my now husband had be I had made him the effigy very unfairly. What's interesting is, he spent his 20s. We got married when he was 31. He spent his 20s traveling the world and having all sorts of fun, right? And
Yeah.
so we met, he was ready to settle down. And when I would have been 30 when we got married, I was ready to ramp up my life, and like my kids are starting to get older, and and
Yeah.
it was kind of this crossroads, if you will, of what we wanted for and from our life at that time.
And then you had another child, which doesn't
Right.
usually play into
Yeah,
the leapfrogging the planet and expanding. Yes. You reset the clock. You reset the pause. Yeah.
Only number two of mine was planned. One and three were, I was on birth control.
Okay.
And I love my children dearly, dearly. But they weren't planned.
Right. And you know, I will just say, like, for me, I appreciate that you said that, but I also there's no judgment for me in that kind of thing. It's like, you know, it is something that you can do intentionally or can be unintentional. I don't think that's related to how we feel about the person when we
Absolutely
choose
not.
to raise them, right? I also don't think that the you can love your maybe it's just me, actually. I love my children. I would throw myself in front of a bus for them. And at the same time, I acknowledge that it is a Herculean, Sisyphean project to raise them. You know, it is a huge amount of work. It does not stop.
Well, and going back
So.
to I literally did not want to have children. I tried to get a hysterectomy at 18 and the doctor laughed at me, right? And this was back in 1988. So we weren't having the sorts of conversations we have today. But what it was less about being me as a mom, but I didn't grow up in a healthy family. I mean, who does, right? It's nuanced. But I did not want to carry the childhood traumas into my own family, and I didn't know at that time how not to do that.
But you were aware actually that you had traumas, which puts
Oh,
you a step
absolutely.
or two ahead of some other people. No, because you don't know. I say that with a smile, but the reality is that whatever happens to us when we're really super young, that is our normal. And we don't actually have any context to be able to say this isn't normal until we run into somebody who says, "Hey, by the way, not everybody goes through this experience." And some things are so egregious that you know off the bat. Like people who grow up in a war zone, I think know that that's
And
not.
that was not me, but I didn't know what a healthy, functional family looked like. I didn't know how to create that, and I was not going to create what I grew up with.
So you had done some time, some effort. You'd put some effort into what's called self-development, and healing already. Like you were working on these things, but you said that you turned your husband into an effigy. Tell us more about what that means so that people understand.
I blamed everything on him. I looked to him, and again, I have the words for this today. I didn't have words for this back then,
Yeah,
right?
that's the reason it's the perfect time to tell the story because you can reflect. Yeah.
But it was I looked to him to fulfill my every need. Like my happiness, I was tying my happiness to him. Again, very unfairly, right? But it was, well, if he was more adventurous right now, if he had a better job making more money, I wouldn't have to work so hard. If he, you know, it was all of that.
Okay,
If
and
only he
the,
would.
if only he would, then I would be happy.
Then I would be.
So you describe it as being unfair, which I will grant you, but I talk to a lot of people who have a checklist that they are looking at, and it's like an equation that we are offered early on. Like if we go to school, if we get a job, if we get married, if we have kids, if we have the house, that is what creates happiness. So do you think that that's an accurate description of like, it's like I wasn't shown, or I didn't have the context to realize what created happiness and fulfillment. Like, so of course I was looking for it over there.
Ooh, I know I for me personally, and I absolutely talking with clients, I absolutely know what you're saying. For me personally, I always felt so broken on the inside.
Okay.
And I was looking to him to fix me.
Okay. And was part of that then that if it wasn't his fault that you'd have to look more at you? Okay. I get it. I get it.
Because I had an unhealthy ego. So, you know, growing up, I was the strong one. I was the protector of my mom and my brother. Like I carried this warrior chip on my shoulder,
First
right?
daughter, oldest
First
daughter.
daughter, oldest daughter. Yeah, I'm the eldest of the eldest of the eldest of the eldest, raising the eldest. So
There
there
you go.
you go. There's a lot of strong female energy. What was I saying? And so I had this persona, this identity that I didn't need anyone, right? That no one could hurt me, that I was all alone in this world and it was up to me, right? I mean, I was a real blast to be around. Right, but with that came ego and false confidence and false bravado. And yes, who was I without this identity if I had to face the truth of myself?
All right. And so I think that's very, I give you a lot of credit for that level of self-awareness
It's a blessing curse.
and also take, okay, so They, in your words, you described this. So you're in this situation, you're married, this is your second marriage, you've got three kids under tow, underfoot. You are aware that you ha think you're, you and your husband have a different view of what the future should be in the immediate sense. You've decided that the solution is divorce. You describe this as the darkest night of the soul, at the which you realized at the 11th hour that you wanted to change your mind. Take us through, because divorce is not instant. Take us through where you were in this process, what was going on, and then what happened.
Well, real quick, when I had so the fall of the year before, I had decided I was going to proceed with divorce, right? But I kept it to myself until February of 2015.
Yes.
But
Which is
I would
'cause you'd been
kind of,
through it before. You don't actually have to announce it when you have the idea.
But I would tell, acquaintances like, I love him, but, I love him, but, and I would even say, maybe we can remarry when we're in our 70s. Right. So going back to that 10% statistic that you threw out, that's where that comes in. Okay. So 2015, it was February. I had gone to a retreat. I'd come home from the retreat of like, I'm telling him I want a divorce. Right. So we sit down and we have that conversation. And our daughter was the only one living at home still. And so she would have been 10. And we were like, let's wait to tell her until the school year is done. Right. So from February to end of May, we were living, together. We would hold hands. We'd sleep in the same bed. Like I loved him, but, right? That was what I kept saying. I love him, but I had gone to rent an apartment. A couple, let's say March or April of that year, I had rented an apartment. It sat empty. I was starting to fill it. School year end was coming closer and closer. School year ends, and we tell our daughter that next weekend. That was the dark night of the soul. When we went to bed that night, I'm sure you could imagine. Like we were, I did not carry the same dysfunctions of my childhood into hers. And so her dad and I were her absolute everything. And I didn't realize that until that day, right? But I go to bed that night and I can't fall asleep. And the only way I can describe it is my heart finally started talking louder than my ego. Very unhealthy ego. Very, very. But my heart was like, you don't want this. You don't want this. You're making a huge mistake. You don't want this. You like over and over and over again. And I sat there and I cried and it was tossed and turned and I couldn't sleep. So he wakes up the next morning and I look at him and I said, I think I'm making a big mistake. Can we talk? And through that, he was never, he knew, he would say, I think you're making a mistake, but this, like, I can't not, he's not like, I'm not gonna beg you to stay. That's just not his style. He's like, I think you're making a mistake. I don't want you to do this, but I'm also not going to try to talk you out of it. You have to have your own journey with it, right? So he was open to talking, but man, that night was long. And it, I call it dark night of the soul because remember, I have this identity. It's a strong, independent, fierce warrior woman who, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, who am I without my decision? If I can't trust the decisions I'm making, who even am I?
So real questioning about your identity. And so you, the thought that was echoing through your head, the way you remember it and that night was, this is not what you want. Let's back this up. When you, for the year before, when you had been taking the mental action and the planning steps towards divorce, what did you think that you wanted out of the divorce? Like, what was the craving and the benefit of that you were looking for in the divorce? Bef like, what were your thoughts? Do you remember?
I do. I absolutely do. So again, leading up to that, I had done all sorts of things to try to fix, right? And the one thing I hadn't tried yet was divorce. So what I was looking for was freedom.
Freedom in the sense of.
Everything I wanted, getting pregnant at 19, and that's a whole story there. I never wanted, I don't like being constrained, right? The it's not even a commitment thing. It's an autonomous thing. And I did not, and it sounds so selfish as I say it. I'm working not to judge that, but I did not want responsibilities for anyone other than myself.
So I mean, I think that's very interesting that you lump that under under the feeling of selfish, because I think a lot of people would say that autonomy is directly, a sense of autonomy can be tied directly to security.
Right?
Right. Like,
Yeah.
so if I can't make the decisions, then somebody else is making them for me, right?
Yeah.
And it's one of the things that is really, really, so we do a lot of talking about the impact of domestic labor and emotional labor these days, right? But it's so hard to quantify how much effort it takes holding space for everybody else in your life, right? Like, it's like, so there was one time, I was running a business and I was feeling completely overwhelmed and I had all these small kids and I was going to sign on for a coaching program. And the guy's like, so I was like, I am not making any traction in this. And he's like, let's do a time audit. And I was like, ah, this is a waste of my time. But I did it anyway. And I was like, I have a whopping total of 45 minutes in my day that is not already pre-assigned to all these other people. And that didn't feel good. It didn't
Well,
feel
and
good.
here's my thinking is that if I only had my daughter 50% of the time,
Right.
right?
Okay. Yep.
And I didn't have to worry about being in partnership with anyone, that gave 50% of my time solely to me creating a life I wanted to be living in.
So, when we're talking about autonomous decisions, what were some of the things that were niggling at you? Are we talking about, like, I just want to have cereal for dinner? I don't want to, or I want to decide when I'm doing the laundry. I want control of the remote. I want control of the thermostat. What were the things
No.
that were, what were the things that were in there? None of those. Okay.
None of those.
All right.
My husband is a wonderful, wonderful, like that's never been an issue.
All right.
I think to travel where I wanted to travel, to have
Okay.
the experiences I wanted to have. My husband and I together can be very, 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 very homebodies.
Okay.
But I also thrive, and he does too. But I thrive on experiences. Big, small doesn't matter, right? And I was looking at this life of homebodiness for the rest of my life, and I'm like, I can't do this.
This is not what I want.
But it
And
was,
yeah.
he's always up for the experience. It might take a little bit to like get him going, but going back to the effigy, the conversation I was having in my head with him was like, he was like, no, I don't want to go do that. I want to sit on my ass the rest of my life. That's not what he wants, but that's what I had projected.
Okay, so you hadn't actually, had you had those conversations with him that I would like to travel more or?
Well, I mean, yes, but not to the depth of that it was driving me to make this divorce decision,
Okay.
right? So surface level.
Surface level. And you do have, at this point, you have a small child who I'm assuming is in some sort of school. Right. And so the school, your life was really being controlled by the Minneapolis school system. Yes. And so that's not even my joke. When my kids were babies, it was somebody who was like, ah, I'd like to get this kid on a sleep schedule. And a nurse made that joke. She said, don't worry about that. Cause when your kids start school, that's who sets the schedule. it's not always true. It's one of the reasons people do other types of schools, but all right. So then let's talk about this. Did your husband and your daughter, did they just let you call this as a mulligan and walk it back? Like, what happened?
So my husband and I agreed to give it a week, like to talk throughout the
Okay.
week before we brought our daughter into the conversation, just to make sure I wasn't having this panic knee jerk that I was going to change my mind, in the next few days. And so I thought that was a very adult thing for us to do.
I do think that's very responsible.
But it was also in that week, it was, well, what do we need to do to rebuild and repair, right? And it was,
Okay.
we talked about we are going to go to couples counseling, right? And so there was a lot of conversation, and I made a promise to him, but also myself, that I was never going to put us through this again,
Okay.
right? That if I was staying, if we were doing this, like this was for life, because my husband is a He's a manly man with a very sensitive soul, and I put him through the ringer. I put our daughter through the ringer, and it was, I cannot do this to them and myself again.
Okay, I think that's fair. I think there's also a lot of awareness there that you can work on repairs. It's not a guarantee, but to see that as the process. Yeah, I think that that's pretty good. So you shared on the intake form that you spent a decade rebuilding yourself from the inside out into the sparkly human that you are today. Let's say more about that. Like, what went into you rebuilding yourself? So you've been very open and claimed a lot about yourself, but so talk more about what you were doing with rebuilding.
So Dark Night of the Soul had my legs swept out from underneath me, right? And again, it's that I don't even know who I am. I knew I didn't like myself, but I'm like, I don't even know who I am. So the rebuilding, it was, and then something happened shortly thereafter from my mom that made me, it was the two things back to back just really swept me out from under my legs. But it was to that point, I had tried self-hating my way to changing, like to loving, right? And it was that realization of like, okay, well, that hasn't worked for 45 years of my life. How about we try kindness, compassion? How about, I'm raising this 10-year-old daughter. How about we try mothering? When I mother her, I also learn how to mother myself, right?
Okay.
And it, it's the if I was feeling a certain way, I was like, okay, if my daughter came to me with this, what would I want her to feel? What would I do for her? And then giving that to myself in all sorts of different ways, right?
Can you think of, I know this is like an on the spot kind of question, but can you think of an example of a time when that came up?
So something had happened, a conversation with my mom, which usually I'd get off and feel, an
2 years
inch
old,
tall. So I remember going to my husband and I said to him very vulnerably, and at this point it was very hard to be vulnerable, but I'm like, I have to express what I need, right? And I said, I need the hug of a parent. I don't need the hug of a spouse right now. I just need to be held like a parent would hold me, right? That was, I even get a little teary now because that was such a fundamental shift in me showing up for my needs. I didn't, that I had spent thousands of dollars on coaches through the years to validate me as a woman, right? And so I didn't have that parental nurturing energy growing up, and I still needed it at age 45.
It is a crazy idea, and it's not mine, and I'm just offering it as like the big shell context of what we're talking about. It is sometimes hard to grasp that we can do these things for ourselves that we think are somebody else's job. So the idea that a wound that is created because somebody else in your life didn't show up, you can learn to heal on your own without them, is a crazy thing to try and wrap your head around sometimes. But also, to just expand that out within not within the field of self-help, but also within psychology and therapy and all of these things. The benefit of learning how to not get validation externally and generate from yourself is a through line. A lot of people talk about that.
It's, I can easily sit here today, 10 years later, and be like, yeah, I don't need anyone to validate me, right? But back then, no, I when I say like I put my family in financial harm's way because of the money I was spending, trying to get others to validate me, it's sad, right? And again, it's my story is not all that uncommon. I just have the gift of being able to share it.
It is really interesting. It's something I've been thinking about a lot. Maybe it's because I have so many of these conversations. Maybe it's because, wisdom comes with, maturity. I don't have any idea, but it is very, very interesting how individual this story feels and how common it is. And at the same time, I will say that doesn't mean that it's not super, super scary to come to the awareness that it happens to you. Like the realization where you wake up and this, I think people can go through this more than once, but the where you wake up and you're like, oh, well, how did I get here? And why is this my life?
Yeah. Well, and I want to share another big thing. This is the hugest thing for me. So pre-2015 and pre this event, one of my things that kept me up at night was this image of myself, that I had died in my older years, right? And because I had isolated myself, I was this bitter, resentful, lonely old woman. My kids only visited out of obligation. You could tell they didn't want to be there. I die and no one comes to my funeral except my children, and they're embarrassed because no one comes to their mom's funeral. Like this literally kept me up at night. I also had this vision of me at 80, who was like this lively, vibrant, irreverent, like still getting into trouble, still being unruly, still, having the time of her life and what have you. And so I remember specifically saying, I'm on this path of the bitter, resentful. I don't have to be. How do I get myself onto the path of this other vibrant? And I have to tell you, Amy, it is why I have pink hair. It is why I have pink Doc Martens. It's why I scoured our local vintage shops to find the motorcycle, my vintage motorcycle jacket, because I have this external image of myself in my older years. And the question became, well, why can't I be that now?
Right. Well, that,
Right?
yes, that, well, you just, that last sentence is, you just saved many, many of the listeners thousands of dollars in buying self-help books, because that is the
Well,
instruction. It's like that thing you want in the future, start creating it now.
Well,
Like,
and that's
yeah.
how I start every client, is zooming ahead to like, who do you want to be when in your older years? Like the
Yeah.
feeling that, like, it's not the, yes, a lot of my stuff might that I talked about is the external, but it's what it gives me of like, I have become the vibrant, lively, full of life, full of love and life person that now magnetizes others to me.
I love that. I absolutely love it. All right. So when I was a kid, we've talked a lot about this, right? But I'm gonna throw it back out for discussion, because I think that, so it was when I was a kid, I had this babysitter, and when my brother and I would fight, she would just very, and I would go to ask her to intervene. She would be like, it takes two soldiers to have a war. I hated it when she said that to me, because it meant that we both were a part of the equation, right? I want to simultaneously, I admire how much of this you've taken on for yourself, that it was your ego, your thing, so on and so forth. But I also want to open it up and let you say, because there's more than one person involved in this with a lot of time. Like, how, if, were there two people playing a part in what was going on in this relationship? And if you're super brave, how
I'm
would you
so
split up?
brave.
How would you split up the percentages of who was driving this dysfunction, before you guys sat down and began to work on it?
Well, for anyone who watches Love on the Spectrum, I am very brave in my heart. I would say 70-30. Seventy
Okay.
thirty.
You're
Am
gonna,
I,
you're the 70 is you. You're taking the 70
70 is
yourself.
me.
Okay.
We both had things that we wanted to work on as both as individuals and in partnership together. And we very much we took those very seriously.
Which I gotta say, as somebody who talks to a lot of couples and has my own relationship, that is really, really amazing on both of you. Because, like, so the Gottmans, when they did the research in the marriage lab, and they said the number one factor that predicts whether a marriage will stay together or break apart is the ability to work on repair, right? And some people will try and sell you that one person can work on that in a relationship and you'll see improvement. I think that's
No.
false. I think
I
that's
do
false.
too.
I think that if only one person is
Absolutely.
working on it, you end up just being a doormat for everybody in the family.
I if my husband were that, I would we wouldn't be married. I'm not attracted to that. That sort of like someone who doesn't recognize that they also play a role and have a part and have some work to do in, you know what I mean? I just,
I do. But I still think it deserves praise that you guys were
thank you.
able to
Thank
see
you.
it and come to the table. When I was doing my training as a family mediator, I asked the person leading the course, I was like, why doesn't it work? Like, what? Because I was hearing from my clients that mediation hadn't worked for them. And I was like, oh, but this looks like a perfect system. Why wouldn't it work?
Well, one of the things we
And the guy said, he's like,
Sorry.
one of the reasons is somebody's not willing to come to the table. Like, if there's somebody who's not willing to participate, it doesn't work.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. One of the things we did early on that I think was really, really cool, and we still use it to this day, and I can't remember, it was some sort of test that kind of tells you where you go in conflict. And then we hired someone to analyze both of ours and help us understand each other when we're in conflict, if that makes sense.
It does. No, like, how do you respond when you're under pressure? Sure, absolutely.
And so
Where
we,
do you
like I
go in conflict? What do you do?
I am fast to anger and fast to come down.
So,
He is
and
very, 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 very slow to anger and equally the same to come down from it. Right. But
but
we've
you
learned
springboard.
techniques for how to, if he's in this slow build, we've learned techniques for how to communicate together to try to shorten his time. And then for me, not to get kind of, it's like, oh, yeah, we have our techniques now for how to, if I'm fast to anger about something, he knows now not to make it about him. Does that make sense?
It does. It does. Like, learning how, like, I mean, that's part of the, building a relationship together, and is doing that. And what makes families complicated is that, we're talking about you and your husband, but if you've got a family, you've got a bunch of other people. And when some of those people are less than 3 feet tall, they don't have all the skills. They don't have all the skills. So everybody's navigating that. All right. So 70-30. All right. I love that you were up for that. All right. So in a minute, we're going to do the final questions. But I want to give you a chance to tell people about what you do these days. Like, we've been talking about this very personal story, which is great. But what is it that you do, and how should people who are listening who want to get to know you better follow up after?
So I work with people like me who checked all the boxes and still have that restless, bored, I know there's more for me, thing. They're mission driven, purpose driven. They want to have a bigger impact on the world. So we work on like what does that vision look like, right? Without the shoulds, without the rules, all of that, like what do you actually want? And then how do we take the clues, the breadcrumbs from that, and actually make it happen for you? So very much tied to my 80-year-old self story. It's like, what is that vision and how do we do that? Whether it's in your life, your business, like all of it, right? I am building the foundations for a community. It's called We the Unruly. And it is this collective of folks like us coming together because we know we have so much magic in us, but because of all the different things that have happened, like we need reminders of our magic and we need to be in community, lifting each other up to do our best work, show up as our best selves in the ways that we want to. You can find me at wetheunruly.com and we'll have my socials in the show notes.
All the socials will be there, all the things. You have very generously made an offer for the audience, and I'm going to share it. So it's a 30-minute one-on-one call with you called Get Out of Your Own Damn Way. You'll talk about one to two things that are holding you back. Normally, these are just under $200, $197, but there's a link in the for the audience, so you can get that for free. That's a really generous offer. The link is in the show notes for people, but also the best way for everybody who's watching and listening to get these links is to be a subscriber to the Imperfect Adulting email community, because then I just zap it to you in your email. You click on it, easy peasy, lemon squeezy. All
Yeah, and
right.
super quick though, that the 30 minutes, that is not me. It's not like a sales call in disguise. There will be no sales conversation unless you take it there, right? Yeah, it is 30 minutes focused on you. And I have 30 years of project management, strategic vision to reality experience. And so I bring that plus my own stories to really help you get out of your own damn way.
Love it. All right, Jen, are you ready for the rapid fire questions? The fun
Let's do
rapid
it.
fire.
Do it.
All right. This is de you and I have met before, and so this was absolutely inspired by your hair. Anyway, what is your favorite color, and is it the same as when you were a young kid?
My favorite color is pink, and it would not have been my favorite color. I think I've healed enough of my inner kiddo that the pink is, I think that I'm having so much fun with pink, and it's definitely because the inner kiddo is healed.
All right, what was your favorite color when you were like
I
five or
want to say
six?
lavender,
I'm
mint
good.
green.
Okay, there we go. Very much little ponies, the theme. Yep, absolutely. All right, very good. All right. In your whole life, thinking about all of the places that you've been, if I asked you to name the most beautiful, inspiring place that you visited in person, what would you say?
Bali.
Nice.
A
I have not
banyan
been there.
tree in Bali. You've been there?
No, I have
You
not.
haven't? Okay.
I have not. We have banyan trees in South Florida, so I would not need to go to see a banyan tree specifically, but
Got it.
it looks beautiful, and I wish it was not quite so far away.
Yeah. It's beautiful, not only the land, but the people and the culture.
Only negative things I've ever heard people say about Bali is how long it takes to get there. And if people travel unknowingly in monsoon season and don't know it, that's so like that's the, but otherwise it's like, high praise all the way across. Okay, so what was the very first job you had, and do you remember how much you were paid?
I do, Amy. My mom signed me up to babysit her friend's three children under 10 for a whole entire summer, 40 hours a week. I am not a kid person. I love mine. I am not a kid person. This was torture, and I want to say I earned $10 a day.
Oh God.
And I wanted to be off with my friends, going to the beach and all
Yeah.
of that, and 40 hours a week, all day, every day.
How old were you?
15, 14, 15.
15. Was she trying to keep you occupied during the summer so you didn't get in trouble?
Probably.
Okay.
I never thought of it that way, but probably.
It is one of the weird things about parenting people that are your own kids is that you have to reevaluate the decisions your own parents made. And there have been several of these moments with the four kids that have gone through our house where I'm like, oh, darn it. Now I see why they did that.
My business has unruly in it, so there is a certain element of that that I carry with me throughout my life.
Well, I always thought I was a delight as a child, but if my parents were around for me to ask them, I think I might get a slightly different choice, slightly different story. And I'm only able to realize that at 45 and above. All right, Jen, that's it. Thank you so much for being a wonderful guest on the show today.
Oh, thank you so much. It was fun. It was fun.
Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously. Subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Obvi again, please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself, head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adultier adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.